This is the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Welcome, Arizona Cardinals fans. It's the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root, from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site, covering the Arizona Cardinals. And my co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And we're in episode 262 in this weird time of almost everyone staying home. Seth, we have had free agency. This is our free agent reaction show, episode 262. What do you think of what the Cardinals overall have done so far?
I think it's one of those situations where you look at it and they kind of checked all the need boxes really quickly, and then they did it so in kind of varying degrees. Obviously, you have the home run, you have what is a guy coming off what you would call probably like a double season, and then you have a couple singles, and that's, you know, in terms of building a roster, I think it's doing it as close to the right way as possible. Obviously, now the next step is, you know, getting some guys that you were counting on back and healthy, and then going from there. But so far, I think that it's been, you know, their moves in general kind of checked all the boxes they needed to check, and they were all very impressive to kind of expected ho-hum type of things from there.
The Cardinals have been praised with everything that they've done so far. And what we're going to go over in this episode, we're going to go over the biggest moves individually. The DeAndre Hopkins trade, the signing of Jordan Phillips, the addition of Devondre Campbell, the signing of Devon Kennard. Then we'll go into the re-signings, the tagging, and the tenders. And, well, what do they have left to do? And what's left, and talk about those who have actually left, because the Cardinals have had five of their free agents leave elsewhere. So that's coming up on this show. We're going to start off with the home run, which was really kind of, it felt like almost out of nowhere. And now I wrote an article about it the morning of, because I had, through Chuck Harris, who runs an Arizona Cardinals Facebook page, he had tipped me off as to something he had heard from someone. It wasn't one of his sources, but it came from someone who was tipping him off to the fact that there was going to be a big trade for DeAndre Hopkins involving David Johnson. Then there was a little more whispering in the morning, and then it happened. DeAndre Hopkins comes to the Cardinals, and the Cardinals give up David Johnson, his entire contract, and a second-round pick, and the Cardinals also get back a fourth-round pick this year and give up a fourth-round pick next year. That really is one of the biggest stories of the NFL this offseason, because of how lopsided it feels. They get a star receiver, one of the best of the NFL, and that we'll talk about that. So we start with that. We're going to start with the DeAndre Hopkins trade. So we got the news, and you get one of the star receivers in the league, top, maybe best receiver in the NFL. That's arguable. Definitely top three, top five, and you do it for a second round pick and for a contract that you wanted to unload anyway. I don't know how they managed to do it. Seth, how do you think, like, how did that come about? How'd that even happen?
You know, it's one of those things that you hear rumors a lot, and I pass along, I would say probably 50% of the rumors I hear to you. The other 50% I just think are so out there and far-fetched that, you know, it's just, it's not worth it. But if I think something, you know, could come of something, I always try to key you in because, you know, you and I have other jobs or, you know, real jobs or whatever you want to call it, where this isn't what we do full time. So anytime we can get ahead of the situation and have something pre-written and just ready to go to post, it's something we do. And this is one of those things that was mentioned in a, in kind of passing to me, like, ha ha, this is what, you know, Steve Keim's trying to do. And everybody's thinking, oh, well, everybody meaning me just thinking, okay, well, you know, I would love to make a trade for one of the best players in the NFL too. That sounds great. Let's just do that. I mean, yeah, we'll give up our running back who's overpaid and nothing. I had no idea about the involvement of David Johnson. I had just heard that they were making overtures after Hopkins at the time. And when you hear that, you assume it's just a first round pick. I mean, that's really the starting point, right? For a DeAndre Hopkins type player. I mean, we're not talking about a, you know, even a Stephon Diggs type. And I love Stephon Diggs. I think he's a very good wide receiver. I think he's been to one Pro Bowl in his career. DeAndre Hopkins is been voted as one of the best wide receivers in the NFL for three straight years as an all pro. You know, so, and I'm sorry, Diggs has never even been to a Pro Bowl. So Diggs, no Pro Bowls, no all pros. And, you know, he goes for a first. So obviously that was after the Hopkins trades, but just in general, you assume when a player like DeAndre Hopkins starts to get discussed, it's going, the price starts at a first and you kind of go from there. And so you're saying, okay, are you going to give up a first and a, you know, a second in 2021? Are you going to give up a first and, you know, a Hakeem Butler and Andy Isabella, maybe unload some unknown receivers so that the Texans can kind of replace that? Are you going to give up a first and a Christian Kirk and really kind of give them, you know, a solid receiver and then the chance to kind of replace, so to speak, you know, DeAndre Hopkins? And so then when the news came down about David Johnson first, and it kind of came down in cycles. I don't know. Do you remember that? Like, first it was Kenyon Drake gets transition tagged, and we're like, okay, so we wrote about that, and we kind of put the caveat at the end of like, hey, what's going to happen with David Johnson now? And then it was Aaron Wilson, who is now the Houston, one of the Houston Texans beat writers, correct?
For the Houston Chronicle, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So Aaron Wilson tweeted out, and you know, one of the key things you always want to do when you follow certain guys, and so Wilson was kind of an NFL insider. He worked in Baltimore, but now he's with Houston. So he's got a lot of kind of sources. Is he prefaced his tweet by saying four teams are interested in trading for David Johnson. He waited until the Kenyon Drake news dropped and then said four teams are interested in trading for David Johnson, including the Houston Texans. And so now you're thinking, okay, well, the Cardinals are going to give up David Johnson, probably, you know, as Jess kind of really expertly spelled out, going to convert $8 million of his, or probably $6 million of his, you know, $14 or $12 million salary, whatever it was this year, into a bonus and eat that. So now the question is, are they going to have to give up their fourth round pick? Are they going to have to give up, you know, their sixth round pick? Like, what are they going to have to give up on top of David Johnson? And so that's where everything stopped, because never in your wildest dreams, when you hear the conversation about DeAndre Hopkins a couple weeks earlier, are you thinking, oh, this is all part of the DeAndre Hopkins trade? And so then off everything, you and I kind of were texting, and I said, and you said, I wonder if this is part of DeAndre, you know, trading for DeAndre Hopkins. And I said, what do you think you'd have to give up? I think I said, I'd be willing to give up this year's and next year's second, like not even thinking about it, but they probably would want 8 on top of David Johnson if they're going to take on kind of that big chunk of salary. And you and I bandied that about and just kind of left it. And then when the news broke that it was David Johnson for DeAndre Hopkins, and then we didn't have the picks at the time, we're just kind of sitting there going, this can't really be happening. Like, they're definitely giving up 8 at this point, right? Like, there's no way they're giving up David Johnson anything less than the 8th pick to get literally a top 3 wide receiver in the NFL. And then the news comes out that it's pick 40. I mean, it's a second round pick, and David Johnson for one of the 3 best wide receivers in the NFL on a super cost controlled contract for 3 years during his football prime. Oh, and they're going to get a 4th round pick back. Oh, and the Cardinals are going to throw a 2021 4th round pick in there as well, which really never gets talked about because I still don't think anybody can comprehend that it was simply David Johnson in a second for a top 3 wide receiver in the NFL.
It essentially is. And I actually break it up into 2 different deals. And now, getting that deal, you're like, well, how did they pull that off? Then here's some other information that comes out. It turns out the Texans, in part, it appears that they wanted to move him because he was quietly, and I know people have yelled at me for making this comparison, but it's a comparison that my editor has said. Basically, DeAndre Hopkins was pulling an Antonio Brown without the crazy Antonio Brown stuff. He said, I want a new deal, even though he had 3 years left on it, and he wasn't going to report. And if you kind of look at it, the Raiders got Brown for a 3rd and a 5th. The Cardinals are getting Hopkins for a 2nd and next year's 4th. So there's a lot of comparisons. It's just now how they went about it. Hopkins was obviously very quiet about it, kept it inside. But he wants more money. He wants another contract. Even though he's got 3 years left, he's seeing the money that Julio Jones and Amari Cooper are getting. He wants some of that money. And so that's, I'm sure, in part, what drove the price down. As soon as you hear of a player, as soon as a team hears about a player wanting more money, that drives down that price. Now, I still look at it this way. It's a win on both deals. I like to split up these two. The David Johnson is basically 2 separate trades all in one. The Cardinals got Hopkins for a 2nd round pick this year and a 4th round pick next year. That's fantastic. And then on top of that, for David Johnson, they gave him up for a 4th round pick this year. Many shows ago, I said it would be a win at this point because they love Kenyon Drake. They gave up a 5th round pick for Kenyon Drake. If you can somehow get at least a 5th round pick back for David Johnson, then basically you've flipped Kenyon Drake and David Johnson, and you're left with the running back that you like. That's essentially what the Cardinals managed to do. They actually improved picks about 15 as they turned that 5th round pick that they gave up for Kenyon Drake. They transition tag Kenyon Drake, but then they flip Johnson for a 4th round pick. It's a late 4th round pick. And so what you have is winning. They didn't have to take any salary, so they get $8.2 million in salary relief. They don't take they still have $6 million in dead money, but you get rid of a player that you knew you had unload. You pick up a player that is one of the best in football and fills a huge need on the roster. He's on cost control. Now, we have to deal with the money. You have to deal with the money because His cap hit this year is $12.5 million. He has no guaranteed money. It's not like you're going to cut him. $12.5 million this year, $13.5 million next year, $13.915 million in 2022. None of it's guaranteed. And based on the going rate of top receivers, obviously he is underpaid. The problem is there's 3 years left on his deal. The Cardinals trading for him, they had to have known that was part of it. They were acquiring a player that they knew they were going to have to extend or give new money to, and that's going to be about a bit of an issue, especially if an Albert Breer's report came out this Monday that you know, perhaps related to his unhappiness with his contract, that he barely practiced and was kind of, aside from the whole thing that supposedly Bill O'Brien told him, that Hopkins told Michael Irvin about parenting his kids, having a bunch of baby mamas, comparing him to Aaron Hernandez, whatnot. Hopkins, during the week, according to Albert Breer's sources, during the week was not great. He was fantastic on Sundays. He worked hard, produced on the field, but he did not make a good effort and was not viewed positively by the coaches during the week. That could simply be, maybe it happened a few times that the team is trying to save face on this deal, but what do you do with Hopkins now? They don't have hardly any cap space right now, and they have a player they acquired knowing they needed to give him more money. Do you think that could be a problem if they can't give him the money right now?
No, I think it's one of those things that you can just look at, and you've seen that Kimes, a guy that typically does a good job of taking care of his players. And so, you know, I think that they'll figure out a way to get something done, whether it's before the season or during the season type thing, where they get him, you know, under contract for the next couple of years and get ready to kind of go from there. You know, I've talked about it. I assume it's going to be a contract in the 2 years, $25 to $30 million range per year. So, you know, 2 years, 50 to $60 million. And people are going to be like, why are you going to pay him $25 to $30 million? Well, no, what'll happen is it'll basically be 2 years and $50 to $60 million tacked on to what he has now, as Jess just laid out, very cost controlled numbers. And so you kind of fill in, you'll probably guarantee half of it, so $30 million, if not $35 million. And so you'll probably balloon those payments in year two and year three. And if you're – I mean, we're going to talk about this, but if you're kind of focusing on what the Cardinals are doing, everything's 1 year or 3 years. They haven't signed any 4 or 5 year deals. You know, and that's all done with the plan, because while there's still a long way to go, it's setting up to be kind of, hey, we know that we're going to have to pay this Kyler Murray guy $45 million a year in 3 years or 4 years. So we want to make sure that all those other guys are off the books and we can kind of focus on Kyler, because that's what you do, you know, in the NFL is you – if you have a rookie contract, you take advantage of the rookie contract. And then once that rookie contract's up, you kind of purge the rest of the roster, sans, you know, a player or two. So you see kind of what the Falcons did. You're seeing now what the Rams are doing. You're even seeing kind of the 49ers having to go that route, where they're having to pick and choose players to extend and stuff like that. And so when you pay your quarterback, that's what goes. So I think you're going to see, you might see a little bit of money in year four, that kind of first year of the new deal for DeAndre Hopkins, but I'd be willing to bet a 2 year, you know, $50 to $60 million extension is coming sometime in 2020. To lock DeAndre Hopkins up, you know, through the entirety of Kyler Murray's contract.
Now, what impact do you see him at? Because obviously, you've already got Larry Fitzgerald, you've already got Christian Kirk. That top number one receiver was was a big need in the offseason, and they filled that in a big way. What does DeAndre Hopkins do to this offense? Obviously, he's better than any option they had. He's not as fast, but kind of the funny thing is that, you know, we've been focused on, or a lot of people have been focused on, like a CeeDee Lamb in the draft at number 8, who's been compared to DeAndre Hopkins. They went out and got the actual DeAndre Hopkins. What do you think he does to the passing game this year with his addition? So even if it's just him, even if they don't add anyone significant at receiver, you've got Hopkins, Kirk, Fitzgerald, Kenyon Drake, and then you've got your mishmash of other guys, whether it's Butler, Isabella, Keyshawn Johnson, as a fourth receiver in those four wide sets, or Dan Arnold, or Max Williams. What does Hopkins do to the passing game that was, it wasn't great last year? Their offense was great down the stretch because the running game was great. The passing game was kind of, Even though Kyler was great, the passing attack wasn't fantastic. What does Hopkins do to that?
You know, you look at it, and I think the Vegas line on over-under wins for the Cardinals tells you the Hopkins impact. Now, obviously, this is still early, but the Vegas lines try to get people in during you know, big periods. So right after the NFL or the Super Bowl, they try to get fans to bet. And then after the first week of free agency, they try to get fans to bet. And then after the NFL draft, they'll try to get fans to bet on their team. And so one of the guys that I emails Jess and I sent us a really interesting thing. And the Cardinals line moved more than any other teams than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And they just signed the greatest quarterback of all time. So, like, nothing big. And so the Bucs went from a 7.5 over-under win to a 9 over-under win. So 1.5 games. The Cardinals went up one game. And I know they made other moves, but just with the DeAndre Hopkins trade. That's how good DeAndre Hopkins is. He's a guy that changes the complexion of your offensive focus, because there's no, okay, we're going to take away DeAndre Hopkins. It's not possible to take DeAndre Hopkins away. It's not something that is done. He's going to be a guy that puts up, you know, probably, I hate to estimate, but I would say it's safe to say he's going to put up over 85 catches and probably 1,200 yards.
Yeah, he hasn't had under 95 catches in the last 3 years.
Right. And for his career, I mean, you look at it, he averages just an insane amount of yards per season. He's actually on pace for a better career than Larry Fitzgerald, which is kind of just stupid to even discuss. And so the big thing with him, though, is, so if you're saying 85 catches, you know, 1,200 yards and 7 touchdowns, that's what he's at. That's what he averages. And remember, they only got Deshaun Watson in 2017. Now that corresponds very nicely with his last 3 all pros, but, you know, as a second year player, and you couldn't pay me money to guess who was throwing footballs to him in 2014, but as a second-year player in 2014, he had 1,210 yards, and then in 2015, he had 1,500 yards receiving and 11 touchdowns. Over 1,500 yards receiving,
was
11
that
touchdowns.
Was that still the Matt Schaub era then?
No. So I just looked. It was Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Fitzy, Fitzmagic.
And then the next year was the combination of Brian Hoyer, Ryan Mallett, and TJ Yates.
Oh, my gosh.
So this is, I mean, this isn't like exaggerating, hyperbole, any of that. This is legitimate. This guy is Larry Fitzgerald. The difference is, he got you know, this is, I mean, you really look at it, it really is Larry Fitzgerald. The difference is he got a young Deshaun Watson as opposed to an old Kurt Warner. I mean, that's really the only difference. And now he gets to go to Kyler Murray. Now, it's unfair to put Murray on the Watson level quite yet. You and I are very comfortable in assuming he's going to get there. But it's like I said, it's a little unfair to put him on that level quite yet. However, his career trajectory kind of points to him being there. And so when you kind of just look at it and what Hopkins is going to have to work with, through the prime of his career, the numbers are going to pan out that he could go on maybe the greatest 6 to 8 year run we've ever seen out of a wide receiver. Obviously the last 3 years, three all pro nods. And so, you know, 3 to 5 years with Murray, that's the change that Hopkins brings. You know, I'm a huge CeeDee Lamb fan. I think he's going to be a very good Pro Bowl type wide receiver in the NFL. And my high end comp for him was DeAndre Hopkins. So that is, if everything goes right situation, no injury issues, no quarterback injury issues. He could put up DeAndre Hopkins like numbers. Well, as Jess said, you got DeAndre Hopkins now. So you don't even have to worry about the what ifs. You don't have to say, what if, you know, as long as this, and this happens, he could be that good. Because he's DeAndre Hopkins. He's already that good. So I just think it's going to take pressure off the offense. It's going to create something that, you know, you really haven't had since 08 and 09 with Fitzgerald and Bolden. I think it's unfair to expect Kirk to put up Fitzgerald or Bolden like numbers, but I think your top three, because remember Stevie Breston had a really nice, years.
He did. He most certainly did. He even had a 1,000-yard season in there.
Yeah, and so it's, you know, but if you figure you had, you know, a high end Fitz or DeAndre Hopkins, and then you get two Stevie Brestons where you're at the 800 to, you know, 1,000 receiving yard type thing in Kirk and Fitzgerald, I think that's just as effective as what you saw in 2008 where there was three, you know, 1,000-yard receivers.
What I think is going to be one of the most interesting things is see what Christian Kirk does this year, because until he got hurt, he would look like he was starting to get in a rhythm, and he was beginning to get the top cornerback from opposing teams. He will not get top cornerbacks against other teams in this year with DeAndre Hopkins. So it'll be interesting to see just how his presence on the field spreads things out. No longer will Cardinals' opponents be able to... Now, they still have to worry about things, but they didn't have to worry a ton about their border receivers when you had a Damir Bird and you have a Keyshawn Johnson. They did some nice things, but
yeah, and I think that's important what you just said. They did nice things, and it's not to disrespect them, but
Hopkins is a completely different level. Like, right. This is taking prime Larry Fitzgerald on your team again, and you still have Larry Fitzgerald.
Exactly, and I think that's the easiest way for Cardinals fans to grasp it. I mean, I know there's a lot of you guys that are football fans, and so you have watched DeAndre Hopkins play, you know, but the easiest way for everybody to kind of understand how good DeAndre Hopkins is just to, you know, invoke that name, Larry Fitzgerald, like you said. And here's what people don't get, and you know, I'm never going to disparage Larry because he's one of the greatest players in NFL history. He's not, you know, just not one of the greatest Cardinals, but one of the greatest players. as great as he's been, DeAndre Hopkins has two more All-Pro bids in his career than Larry Fitzgerald has in his career. Now All-Pro bids are not the be-all, end-all, don't get me wrong. But Fitzgerald has four seasons with over 1,400 yards, which is, you know, incredible. That's a huge number. It's super impressive. He's never had over 1,500 yards in a season. DeAndre Hopkins has two seasons over 1,500 yards receiving. I mean, what? Now you have to remember, this is, you know, 10 years later in terms of the evolution of the NFL, in terms of all of that. But the numbers that Hopkins has put up are just staggering to see.
Codex on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to move on from DeAndre Hopkins, actually talk about free agent moves. Next up, Jordan Phillips, the big defensive tackle from Buffalo. That's coming up next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Jordan Phillips was the first free agent name that came out, and the Cardinals signed into a big deal. 3 years, $30 million. He had 9.5 sacks last season with the Buffalo Bills. Big guy, 6'6", 340, or 6'5", 330. Depends on what listing you find, but he's a big dude. I'd like to point out, this is the most that they've paid any defensive lineman since Calais Campbell. And that's saying something. They were really high on Darius Phylon last year, and they signed him to a 2-year, $10 million deal. Obviously, that didn't work out with, you know, the dance club and the gun and the strippers and all that stuff. But Jordan Phillips, 3 years, $30 million. That's a big chunk of change. But of the defensive linemen that are out there, I will say he was a surprise to me when his name came out. And I'll be honest, I didn't know much about his production, and he had a big jump in production in 2019. What did you think of the addition of Phillips to this defensive line?
You know, it's a guy I've been kind of preaching about, you know, you and I have talked about it quite a bit. You know, I'm looking at it. I text you right after the combine, and we were talking about Derek Brown, and I said, just he comps out to Jordan Phillips at best. I said, just sign Jordan Phillips. Now, you and I did not, and you know, to be fair, we tend to kind of use the spot track salary estimator, and so we expected to see him in the 5 to 7 million range, kind of. I think they had him at like 6.4, and so 10 million a year, as just said, that's the most they've paid a defensive lineman since Calais Campbell. But I think it was one of the biggest needs, and you look at the contracts that were getting done in free agency and along the defensive line, and you know, it's really not that bad when you look at the kind of breakdown of what the contract is, what they were able to, you know, get him for from a production and kind of leadership standpoint, which is something that I think a lot of people overlook in Phillips, is that his maturity from being a guy that struggled to get on the field to a guy that was a leader kind of in that Buffalo locker room and a key cog to a really stout defense was something unexpected. He's going to have a chance now to do even more because he's going to be leaned on even more. I mean, Buffalo has had a really kind of talented defensive line, and front seven defense. They just drafted Ed Oliver, I think in the top 10, but it might have been the top 12. You know, they had another first round pick in Shaq Lawson. They signed Trent Murphy to a big deal. They signed Star Lotulelei. I mean, they invested a ton in this defense, and nobody had more sacks on that team than Jordan Phillips. Nobody had more tackles for losses on that team than Jordan Phillips. And only Shaq Lawson had more quarterback hits on that team than Jordan Phillips. So when you look at what Phillips brings, I know people are kind of perplexed because of his PFF grade, and they're thinking, well, this guy isn't very good. Didn't he have like a 55 PFF grade
It's kind of funny, we talked about this in our group text, is the fact that the Cardinals and Pro Football Focus seem to line up really, really evenly with the draft, but not in free agency. With the pro scouting, it's different. So they veered very much. They strayed from the PFF grades there. Here's the thing I see with a guy like Phillips. He was going to cost more because of the pass rushing production. That's a fact, because we know that pass rush has a premium. Now, should we expect that sort of production from a sack standpoint? I don't think so. I don't think we should. That's just neat. Even Calais Campbell, when he played the 3-4 here, didn't produce those type of sacks. Should we expect 5 to 7, maybe a top end 9? Yeah, and I think he will play. It'll be interesting to see which side they line him up. Will he line up next to Chandler, or will he line up next to Devon Kennard, another one of the signees? It'll be really interesting to see. If they line him up next to Chandler, that duo will be something for opposing offensive lines to worry about quite a bit.
Well, and when you look at it, you know, from the year, whether or not, however you want to look at it, only two guys that really play in the same type of down interior position had as many sacks as Jordan Phillips, or more, sorry, as many or more sacks. That was Eric Armstead, who just signed a 5-year, $85 million deal. So 5 years, $85 million. And he finished with 10 sacks and 11 tackles for loss on the season. And then some guy named Aaron Donald, who's like one of the greatest defensive players of all time. So you can talk me into Joey Bosa playing a similar position, but I won't bite that much. But I mean, Bosa had 11.5 sacks and 18 tackles for loss. So he's, you know, barely over. More tackles for loss, barely over in sacks, and way, way more snaps. Now, I'm not saying that if Phillips got, you know, 800 snaps, he would have had 13 or 14 sacks. But what I am saying is that you look at it from a cost perspective standpoint, as Jess pointed out, it's very hard to disagree with signing a 27-year-old interior pass rusher to that type of contract when you look at the rest of the NFL and what they kind of did in terms of similarities.
And the best part is the fact that, well, they had a clear need on the defensive line. We said they needed to get – the truth is they really needed two starters out of this offseason. Jordan Phillips fills that need immediately. You know, you're not even penciling him. You've got in ink him next to Corey Peters as a starter. And that automatically just it's better than anything that you had on that entire line all last year. And it immediately upgrades everything, because then even if you didn't add another one, then Zach Allen doesn't have to be that productive. He could be fine. But if you've got Phillips becomes your big mean force on the inside. After that, you just need productive bodies.
Yeah, and that's a key thing because it takes, again, as we talked about with what DeAndre Hopkins brings, it takes pressure off the rest of the guys, and it takes pressure off the idea of like, hey, we need you to perform at this high of a level, because it's just a lot of times it's unrealistic to expect players that haven't shown the ability to show that ability, you know, kind of out of the blue. And so what I mean by that is you look at a guy like Jordan Phillips, he's shown that he can play 50%+ of the snaps and produce. Zach Allen's never done that. If you draft Derrick Brown or Javon Kinlaw, they've never done that in the NFL. Corey Peters and Jordan Phillips are two veteran presence guys that have shown that they can do that. And so when you look at it from that perspective, if you say, hey, we need you to get 60% of the snaps, Corey and Jordan, now all of a sudden you just need one more guy to be that 60% guy. Anything you get over 60% is just gravy, as long as it's not out of injury necessity. Because then you have a guy like Jonathan Bullard, you have Miles Brown and Michael Dogby as guys that can rotate in. And now all of a sudden you're just playing the rotation game. And there's still plenty of offseason to sign a Zach Kerr or somebody else back if need be. So I look at it from that perspective. The other perspective is this. The Cardinals signed Jordan Phillips to 3 years, $30 million, not a ton guaranteed. The Jacksonville Jaguars signed Rodney Gunter to 3 years, $18 million. And his career numbers are virtually what Phillips put up last year in a single season. So that's where you upgraded and you look at the cost differential and you just feel like that's a win for the Cardinals.
Absolutely. It's kind of assuming that he pans out and is what he needs to be. Now, he doesn't need to be a 9-sack guy. We haven't had a defense like 6 or 7 sacks. And even that was a lot for Calais Campbell. I think the top year that he had was 8, maybe 9. Now, he went and then played the 4-3 and was just amazing. But as playing the 3-4 end position, which is essentially an interior lineman, even Calais Campbell was not a double-digit sack guy. And Jordan Phillips is going to be a disruptor. He's going to be a force on that line. It's going to be fun to watch. Coming next on the Rise FC Red Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're moving on to the next guy. Fills that inside linebacker need that they need to take care of. And they are excited about it. Should they be? Devondre Campbell. That's coming up next on Rise at C-Red. We're back on the Rise at C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals filled a second critical need with the addition of Devondre Campbell, previously of the Atlanta Falcons. And of all the signings, he's the one that it feels like the Cardinals, through the media, are trying to hype up the most, saying he's the answer to those questions. He's the answer at linebacker next to Jordan Hicks. They signed him to basically a 1-year, $6 million deal worth up to $8.5 million. They did some fuzzy contract numbers with 4 voided years at the back end to basically make his cap hit this year only $2 million. Nonetheless, hugely productive, 129 tackles last year. He had interceptions. He had sacks. He's athletic. He's big. He's physical. Everyone that I talked to from the Falcons side of things, he was a great story. He went from a 4th-round pick to one of their best and most productive linebackers. But he's being touted as the guy to answer, basically to solve their problem, is covering running backs and tight ends. The problem is, those were supposedly, by those who covered the team, his greatest flaws. Now, granted, I will say this. He is a better option. He is obviously a better option than Joe Walker or Hassan Reddick, because he is athletic. He is big. He is physical, and he will hit people. So he's a force in the run game, so that improves that, and he's athletic enough to move, but he hasn't been great in coverage, according to guys who've covered the team. Are we being set up for disappointment when the team is saying quietly behind closed doors that he's the guy to solve that problem?
No, I don't think so. And here's why. Because you look at what the Falcons did on defense, and they have been a team that plays that Seattle zone defense. And there's a big difference in covering zone versus man for linebackers. I think we've actually seen it similar to Hassan Reddick's struggles, where when he's just asked to run with a man, he's actually pretty good at it. But as soon as he's asked to make kind of reads and adjustments on the fly, it can be a problem. So if they're expecting Campbell to come in and sit in a hook to curl zone and drop in coverage that way, then yeah, I mean, you could see some struggles. If they're asking him like, hey, we need you to man up tight end or back out or whatever it is, I think you're in a better position to see him succeed.
I like his fit. I like the physicality. I kind of like the price. And I like with the one-year deal, it gives them the flexibility, one, to extend that contract if he plays really well. Especially with – there was a – we saw guys that we wanted the Cardinals go after, like Nick Kwiatkowski, guys like Corey Littleton. They were going for more. Now, Kwiatkowski ended up going to get $7 million a year. Corey Littleton, what he got? A little under $12 million a year. Guys like that. And the Cardinals get him on a one-year deal. It creates some flexibility. Let me put this out there. If, for some reason, Isaiah Simmons falls to the Cardinals and he's the guy they want, they're in position to be able to use him as a rookie in a variety of roles. He could be a backup edge rusher. He could be a dime rusher or edge or guys that comes in and rushes the passer or covers guys. Now, Campbell plays well, and you think that Simmons is the future, guess what? You can let him go in free agency. Simmons fills in. You like Campbell, and you see Jordan Hicks is maybe getting a little long in the tooth. They kind of have an out. It's not a great out, but they could let him go. They could let Jordan Hicks go next year in free agency with $6 million of dead cap space, dead money against the cap. And then you could go with Campbell and Simmons. It creates a lot of flexibility, and I like how they've done that. Now, the problem is, well, what if he prices himself out by playing so well? Because as it is, you have a lot invested financially into both of those linebacker positions because you're paying Hicks an average of $9 million a year. Can you afford, do you want to afford to put that much money into that inside linebacker position? But in terms of fit, the Cardinals, I mean, what everyone is saying is that he's a perfect fit. Max Williams, former teammate at Minnesota, Sid, said that he can cover tight ends. Everyone is saying that he can cover tight ends except people in Atlanta. So that's going to be something we watch as something we're going to have to watch this year as if the year ever starts, what sort of impact that Campbell has. But obviously, we've now upgraded significantly on the defensive line, and they've upgraded significantly at inside linebacker. How much better is the defense going to be just with those two additions up front?
I mean, I would hope significantly, to the point where we see just kind of a huge growth. But the problem becomes that this team and maybe the defensive coordinator. I mean, you'd like to say that they can build on the end of last year, where the last, you know, four games, they were good enough. They were good enough to put their team in a position to win consistently. I think that's kind of what you're hoping, and that's where you're kind of going with the additions, is that there's no major losses. I mean, we'll talk about the guys they lost in name, but there was no major losses. The last four games, you know, you gave up 23, 24, 13, and 31. It's not great by any means, but it's definitely better than what you were seeing during the season, where the team was giving up, you know, 28 points per game, basically. And so, you know, in three of those games, you were under your season average, and the last game was in Atlanta against Atlanta. One of those games you beat Seattle in Seattle. So I think the ideal is that you're better in the sense that you'll be maybe a top 25 defense with those guys, but that's just right now, obviously. I think the bigger thing is the health of Robert Alford, and then obviously Patrick Peterson being back at, you know, like I said, those last four game level, as opposed to the Patrick Peterson that we were legitimately questioning whether or not he was actually trying during games.
Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Rep podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we move on to their third edition, and that is Devon Kennard, hometown guy. We'll talk about him and his fit coming to next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Their third major addition to the team is Devon Kennard, cut by the Detroit Lions. And what he said was a surprise. He was not anticipating that after the Lions went out and spent a lot of money on Jamie Collins, a guy that Matt Patricia, their head coach, is very familiar with from his time at the New England Patriots. And Kennard, 3 years, $20 million. We haven't seen the exact numbers and how it fits in the cap. But they fill another need, as he now will slide in as the other starting outside linebacker opposite of Chandler Jones. Kennard, you might recall, if you are familiar with high school ball, about 10 years ago, he was the best football player in the state of Arizona in high school, and a number one recruit in all of the entire country playing at Desert Vista. He goes on to USC. He plays for the Giants. He plays for the Lions. And now he comes home for his hometown team where he grew up, because his father, Derek Kennard, played for the Arizona Cardinals back, or the Phoenix Cardinals back in the day, and is still in the Valley. So, first off, he was a guy I targeted when I saw the report that the Lions were considering releasing and they were trying to trade. He and Leonard Floyd, because he was going to get cut by the Bears and did get cut, were two guys that said there's the opportunity for the Cardinals. Now, Kennard had 7 sacks in each of the last 2 years, but he's actually going to be playing a new position. I don't believe he's ever played outside linebacker in a 3-4. I think he's been an outside linebacker in a 4-3 for his entire career. I think he has a chance to do even more than he's done the past couple of years, even though the guys that cover the Lions, Jeff Risdom over at LionsWire.com, he said that he's really kind of uncreative in terms of pass rushing skill, but you get a great effort. He's a cleanup guy, but hey, that worked out pretty well with Chandler Jones and Marcus Golden, and Kennard is far more athletic than Golden.
Yeah, and I think you have a guy that is able to be really, really solid against the run, and that's something that this team needs so desperately right now. As somebody, you know, somebody that is consistently setting the edge correctly and keeping contained. That was something that we saw far too often break down with Terrell Suggs, even Chandler Jones to an extent. But I think the biggest thing that Kennard does is he offers athleticism out of the backfield or out of the backfield against running backs. And so what that does is that allows Vance Joseph to deploy his defense more precisely of what he was liking to do. We talked about it last year. You know, Jones was having to play on the strong side, which was not really his forte, but he was doing it and obviously doing it well enough. I mean, all pro season.
He was the drop linebacker because he was better at it than Terrell Suggs, obviously.
Right. So now you have a guy in Kennard who, as you know, expertly pointed out, he was playing as a 43 outside linebacker. So one of their key jobs is to drop into coverage. And so you have Kennard, you have a guy now opposite Chandler Jones that's not going to be asked to rush the passer every single down, but has the ability to drop into coverage and rush the passer. I think 6 to 8 sacks is not unreasonable. And now all of a sudden, you know, if you're saying 6, let's go low end, you're saying 6 sacks for Kennard and you're saying 6 sacks for Phillips, that's 12 sacks. Last year, Suggs had, what, 2 or 3?
Suggs had 5.5, but it felt like nothing after. Oh, okay. It was 0 after, like, week 5.
So 5.5, and then Gunter, I think, only had 2 last year.
Yeah, Gunter had 2. I think the next leading guy was Cassius Marsh for 2.5.
And so you're looking at it, and so you're saying, okay, we're going to replace Suggs is 5.5 with Kennard 6 and Phillips or Gunter's 2 with Phillips 6. Well, guess what? You're still at a positive, basically 6 out of those. You know, I know it's 5.5, but you look at it and it's just, I think it's they're easy upgrades to see all around. And the biggest thing I really truly believe is that all of these guys offer plus athleticism at their natural positions.
And that's the thing, like Kennard is literally, this is the first time in his career he's playing the position where physically he fits the best.
Right.
As a 3-4 outside linebacker, he's going to drop down. I think it comes down to in Vance Joseph's defense. If things go right, Jones probably won't drop into coverage hardly at all. And Jones was playing this position last year. I think he dropped 40 times all year. So Kennard's not going to do it a lot. And he said in his introductory presser that, now granted, different position, 4-3. He dropped more than any other outside linebacker in the NFL. But he's playing a 4-3, so it's a different story. I think it's quite possible that he could, like, the 7 that he got last year, I think that could be the low end. I'm not going to say he's going to get 12, 13, but I think 8 or 9 is kind of reasonable when he's primarily a pass rusher now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I think you're right. And so, you know, if you're getting 7 to 9 or – you know, from him, and then you're adding Jordan Phillips, you're just getting a better, consistent team in terms of rushing the passer. Like I said, Phillips' forte is not against the run, despite the frame and the size, but he's good enough. And then, of course, you have, like you said, the addition of Campbell is a plus in the run game. And then we just talked about the addition of Kennard is a plus in the run game. So I think overall what you're seeing with these defensive signings are kind of giving Vance Joseph the autonomy to give player to give what he desires in a player and then saying, hey, go find me this. He may not be saying, hey, go get me Jordan Phillips, or even though he was with Phillips in Miami, you know, or he may not be saying, hey, go get me Devin Kennard, but he's saying, go get me a big guy that can push the pocket consistently in the pass rush. Okay. Well, that's Jordan Phillips. We'll pay him a little more than what everybody's expecting. He's saying, hey, go get me an outside backer that's fast enough and athletic enough to rush the passer, but I can drop into coverage and I don't have to ask Chandler to do it because that's just a waste of his talent. okay, that's Devin Kennard. And then, you know, go get me a guy that, you know, and this isn't a shot at Jordan Hicks, but still has some juice left at the inside backer position that can run and chase and plays with his hair on fire and allows Jordan to kind of be that inside backer presence, kind of the brain of the defense and the cerebral guy, maybe not the athletic guy anymore, but the guy that can make plays, you know, in the box and be that, you know, kind of bulk tackle guy. And I think they did that really well. You know, I'm not going to sell this as like, oh, this is a top 10 defense in the making. No, but like no. I said,
it can be average. It can be average, and average would be so much better than it was last year.
Right. And so when you look at it, I just think that it's odd to see a team kind of identify characteristic or traits that they desire in a player and then really kind of lean into getting those guys. And like I said, they probably overpaid for both Phillips and Kennard on a, you know, on the bulk of the contract basis. If you look at just the raw numbers, 320 and 330. But when you're talking about getting your defensive coordinator that you, I mean, let's be honest, really hung out to dry in 2019 and said, hey, we're going to really focus on our offense. We need you just to hang in there. And then the two guys that you really did go out and get along the defensive line get arrested and hurt. You're just, I mean, now all of a sudden you're saying like, here's, you know, basically what it is it's akin to, you know, getting your honey-do list and saying like, hey, these things are what I want done. I'm not going to say that your wife or spouse or significant other cares how they're done as long as the end result is what she or they or he are looking for. And so I think that's what kind of what Vance Joseph did and what Steve Keim did for Vance Joseph.
Now, what I love about this as well, think about it this way. Kennard is what we could possibly have hoped Hassan Reddick could be. Only he actually is that guy. So Hassan Reddick, in a best-case scenario this next year, could have been like Devon Kennard. And now we have actually Devon Kennard. I think this signals that it's going to be highly... I would be shocked if Reddick remains on the roster. I would be shocked if he's not traded. I know they're not going to cut him. I'd be shocked if he's not traded between now and, well, even by the draft. I think he'll end up... Or come at the end of training camp, he becomes like... he turns into a sixth-round pick or a fifth-round pick. That's the other thing I see out of that. But they strategically... I liked the moves that they've made on defense. They filled clear needs, and they're clearly better. And it also, the message was sent is they are pleased with their defensive secondary, which jives with what Buda Baker was saying with Patrick Peterson. So we need continuity. Let's keep the same guys. They trust who they have back there. They were playing well down the stretch. Let's upgrade the front seven, and they've done that. That's very clearly three starter upgrades to the defense on the front seven. You know, if they do nothing else, this should no longer be a terrible defense. It should be an okay defense. Coming next on the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're going to talk about the players they've brought back. They have retained a total of 10 players that were either scheduled to be free agents or were free agents. 10 players are coming back. We'll talk about them. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now, 10 players. The Cardinals entered the offseason who are going to be free agents. 10 are returning. Larry Fitzgerald, DJ Humphreys, those two are two of the eight. Justin Murray was offered a tendered a qualifying offer. He was an exclusive rights free agent. He's going to be back. Zane Gonzalez, surprisingly, second round tender. I think it's a waste of $1 million personally, but it keeps him protected and probably will make it so another team tries to go after him. And then they transition tag Kenyon Drake at $8.48, basically $8.5 million. He's going to cost a little more against the cap than what DJ David Johnson did. And he's actually already planned on signing that because there was nothing else out there that was going to pay him more than that. Then they've added in the last couple of days some solid depth guys. Chris Banjo, special teamer, safety. Charles Washington. They bring back Jonathan Bullard, Max Garcia. They also add, who's the other guy that I'm drawing a blank. So we've got DJ Fitz, Zane, so you got Banjo.
Chris Banjo, Charles Washington,
Bullard.
Brett Hundley,
obviously. The backup quarterback. He's the 10th guy. And so, key guys. Now, Washington may be, for me, the biggest surprise. Although they did like what he did on special teams. Obviously, they liked him enough because they claimed him off waivers. Chris Banjo was kind of something I expected because not only is he a special teams guy, but he has had limited defensive play on in rotation when he was playing for the Saints and Purdue. He's got three interceptions and really small amount of playing time at safety. But every single one of these guys are key rotational players. Max Garcia is a great fit. You want him on the as your reserve guy on the offensive interior. Brett Hundley, he established him as a solid backup quarterback for them, a guy that you can trust if you go into the game. Charles Washington, solid on defense. Solid on special teams. And Jonathan Bullard, who was productive when he was healthy, but before he had the hamstring injury that sent him to injured reserve. And what I like about this, Bullard. You now don't have to have Zach Allen starting. You have a guy that can compete with him. You always want to give those young guys someone that they have to beat out. So whether Bullard is your three or whether Bullard is your fourth defensive lineman, it puts them in a much better position.
Yeah, and that was one of the things we talked about quite a bit, is that one of the biggest issues the Cardinals had last year were having to rely on valuable depth guys as valuable starters. And once you get to that situation, your team's in trouble. And so you can look at the thinness of the roster from the beginning and say, well, this just wasn't well constructed. But as we've kind of harped on too much about the defensive line, when two guys before the season, or within the first three games of the season are done for the year, that's hard to overcome because you're talking about 2/3 of your starters. When your all pro corner's gone, that's a problem. And so getting these depth guys as just that depth instantly makes your team better because you're taking off from the same spot you were last year, and now those guys are taking a back seat to what should be better players, if that makes sense. And so the only guy I see that's going to be kind of – I mean, obviously Zane, but the only guy I see that's going to kind of start in a fight for a true starting 11 role would – potentially be Max Garcia, because we're kind of uncertain of what's going on at the center position right now for the Cardinals.
What I like, if we remember from a year ago, this time last year, there was a roster purge. They tried, and we talked about it, it was as if they were trying to get all the stink of 2018 off. So they're like chewing everyone, even Josh Bynes, who was one of their better defensive players. Everyone that they could have gotten rid of, they got rid of. They were trying to cleanse themselves from the stink of 2018. 2019, guess what? They want their guys back. They were happy with what they began to build. And so they were bringing a core back so that it isn't. And I think it's going to be even more important this offseason as we're dealing with this whole pandemic and shutdowns what will probably be less offseason time together. Having more players returning will be an advantage for the Cardinals competitively when we reach the season.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's the goal here, and that's kind of what we're looking at in terms of the overall moving forward, is that this team looks at the growth from last year, kind of that I know they only went won five games, but that's a two-game improvement. It was, I mean, do you count it as 2.5? I don't really know how ties work. But, you know, you count it as a two-game improvement, and you really improve three games in the loss column. And so, you know, you get these key players that have impacts on special teams. I mean, Chris Banjo and Charles Washington were kind of unheralded and unknown, but they're key guys in a special teams unit that hasn't been an issue for two seasons. Zane Gonzalez was a steadying influence. Now, I'm with you on the tender thing. That was kind of a bridge too far. But I think it's similar, you know, to the idea of like, hey, this isn't a problem, so let's not create a problem. Like, we're willing to spend the extra money just to make sure that it's not a problem again. And then, you know, you haven't really mentioned it yet. Are you saving the Kenyon Drake thing for the next segment?
No, we're going to talk about it here. I was surprised, honestly, when I saw Trent. Whoa. But at least it was cheaper than was initially, because I think SpotTrack initially had it estimated at $10.4 million. I was like, ugh. 8.5,
yeah.
Okay, 8.5, 1 year. Basically, you're filling David Johnson's spot with Kenyon Drake, and you liked him more than David Johnson anyway. So, 1 year, $8.5 million. I can live with that.
And I think for me, I can especially live with it because it's a single year, so he's got to perform, or there's going to be issues in the sense that no team's going to want to touch him with a 10-foot pole. So it's a fair contract. I think it's a good contract. I think in that sense, I mean, I don't ever advocate paying running backs, but if you're going to pay a running back, I'd rather pay him a lot on a 1 year deal than middling numbers on a 3 or 4 year deal, if that makes sense. Like, I'd rather pay Kenyon Drake $8.5 million than Jerick McKinnon $13 million over two seasons and get nothing, if that makes sense.
Right. The Kenyon right now for 1 at 8.5 is better than getting 4 for 25, even though the per year average is lower on the deal. Makes sense. And you almost go the more and more the NFL is going this way, and especially if the Cardinals schematically show that they can plug a running back in, as long as that running back is decisive, that he will produce, well, then here you go. If you get solid production, or if Kenyon misses a game or two because he gets dinged up a little bit and Chase has a productive game, or another running back they bring in doesn't produce the way Chase and Kenyon did last year, then you're hitting territory kind of like the late 90s Denver Broncos with their running scheme, when it felt like it didn't matter who you had in there. And so if the Cardinals are going to have success running ball, as long as they have a type of back of a certain trait, and they can burn through them. And if you want a guy that's more dynamic for a year, you do that route. But otherwise, hey, Kenyon plays, rushes for 1,200 yards this year and goes in free agency, signs a big year, some big deal somewhere else. The Cardinals get the comp back the next year.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's a fair way to kind of set yourself up. Because, like, the Devondre Campbell contract, it doesn't limit you in the draft. I know nobody wants to hear us talk about drafting a running back, but it really is one of those situations where I think you could find a guy in the third round that helps out now slightly and then takes over in year two if you get what you expect out of Kenyon Drake. Because remember, I mean, he only played 8 games, so his numbers extrapolated over a 16-game season are about 1,200 rushing yards, and I don't think 16 touchdowns is fair to expect, because, I mean, he had 4 in a game.
Yeah, he had 7 in the final 3 games.
and so, but if you say 12 touchdowns total, I think that would be fair.
Oh, yeah.
So if you talk about a guy that gets you 1,600 yards and 12 touchdowns from scrimmage, I think that's fair. And then that allows you to, hey, here's 3 years, $18 million or whatever. And then if he's like, no, I want, you know, 3 years, $30 million, then, okay, good luck. Have fun. Like, go get that somewhere. And then, oh, by the way, we have, you know, Cam Akers or Clyde Edwards-Helaire or, you know, whoever
that we draft. Gibson.
Yeah, that you drafted at 72, and that's going to be your replacement. So, you know, don't try and, you know, jerk us around. We'll happily pay you because you're such an integral part, but you're also a replaceable piece. And, you know, I wrote about this, and that's my biggest frustration with Keim, is the things he actually does well is find running backs. and he continues to pay running backs, and it's such a weird old school mentality. But, you know, somebody reminded me of this the other day. I mean, Keim's been in the game for 25 years now, so he's gonna have that old school mentality, because when he started, the first 10 years of his career was all about having a bell cow running back and a guy that could carry the load for your team game in and game out. That's his mantra and where he came from. So it does make sense that he kind of goes back to that and his roots and where he's comfortable. If you just like look, it's not hard to overcome that, but it is what it is. Especially when he's done a good job at it.
Right. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, the final segment. We're going to talk about the players who left and what might the Cardinals still need to do in the last part of free agency. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now, the Cardinals have seen 5 free agents sign elsewhere. So not only are they retaining players of their own, but players who were on their roster a year ago are actually getting jobs somewhere else, which was not something that was happening a year ago. 5 Cardinals have gone, but only one of any significant the significant deal. The first one, Rodney Gunter, gets a 3-year, $18 million deal with the Jacksonville Jaguars. That's fantastic for Rodney. I didn't want to pay him that much, so to come back to the Cardinals. I wanted him to come back, but I didn't want to pay him that much, so good for him. Then Demir Byrd gets a 1-year deal with the New England Patriots. Pharaoh Cooper with the Carolina Panthers. Joe Walker heads to the San Francisco 49ers. And Cassius Marsh, he heads as well to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So you've got Gunter on the 3-year deal and the rest of those 5 players all on 1-year deals, presumably, probably in the $1 to $2 million range. I don't think personally that any of those 4 will end up counting towards the compensatory formula, but I don't know for sure. Now, any of these players, will you miss them?
I mean, I think you'll miss Gunter, but again, he's a depth guy and they paid him $18 million over 3 years. Like you said, good for Rodney. That's all he wanted was one long-term deal. You know, he's set up for life now. And as you and I have professed many times on the show, we'll never begrudge a player for going to get paid when he gets a chance. So, I mean, I wouldn't have paid him that, but I'm glad he got it. You know, Demir Byrd, anytime you have chance to catch passes from the greatest quarterback. Oh, wait. You know, Pharaoh Cooper, anytime you get to catch from an MVP. Oh, wait, no. So, I mean, those guys, you have DeAndre Hopkins. I'm assuming you're going to let Keyshawn Johnson and Hakeem Butler and Andy Isabella kind of fight for the position, barring them taking CeeDee Lamb or Henry Ruggs at eight. So letting those guys walk makes sense. I mean, Cooper is more missed as a return guy, but I think, you know, I think maybe Isabella and those guys, or even, you know, a running back that you draft or somebody could fill in that role. You know, Cassius Marsh is just, I mean, he's really the epitome of just a guy. He's one of those guys that...
but
that,
he's
that,
got a roundhouse kick that's fun.
Yeah, and he's a guy that you pick up every year. A guy like him you pick up every year, and he plays for you for a season, and then he moves on. You know, he's moves on to the next team. He's a guy that is going to be a depth guy his whole career, and he's going to play for, you know, 10, 12 years. And in 5 years, we're going to look up and go, Cassius Marsh is still in the league? And and then, you know, he'll retire, and he'll have played for, you know, 9 teams or 10 teams and made $25 million. And, you know, we can scoff at it, and the joke's on us because he got to live out his dream and played in the NFL for a long time.
Yeah. Now, none of these players are a player I'd miss. You know, Gunter, I did want him back, but not at the money they got him at.
I mean, if you gave me him at half of that, 3 years, $9 million, I'm all over.
Oh, totally. Totally.
You could even stretch me into like the $12 million range, but like as soon as you get to $12 million, I start to go, I don't know. And that's the thing is, if you're saying at, you know, $4 million a year, you're going, I don't know. It's like, all right, well, you could probably do better than.
Like, you can replace Damir Bird's 32 catches. You can replace Pharaoh Cooper's 25 catches. And you better, the way you drafted last year, that should ideally happen from Andy Isabella alone. If it's happening right, you should easily get those catches replaced in that sense. Now, what's left in Cassius Marsh? You know, whatever. He wasn't as impactful as I hoped he would be, but he's a guy that you like to have on your team. What's left for the Cardinals?
He's the perfect depth guy.
Yeah, I mean, he really is. I wanted a couple more sacks out of him because he'd done that the year before. But if you look at what the Cardinals have now, I think you don't even need to necessarily bring in another veteran. You can, because you've got Kennard on one side, you've got Jones on the other. I don't know if you need to add a more veteran guy there when you've got a Kylie Fitzgerald, Terius Dora, and still Hassan Reddick on the roster. Now, I think there's three things that the Cardinals still kind of need to do. One is more of a want, and I want them to sign another rotational defensive line guy like a Zach Kerr, potentially, if I had to bring someone back. I want them to add a cornerback with some playing experience. I don't know if that would be Kevin Peterson bringing him back or a veteran of the Tremaine Brock ilk like they did last year. And then I still think they need a veteran at tackle to back up, whether that's Marcus Gilbert again or someone else of that stature, someone who can compete with Justin Murray, but could also that way you're not just handing Murray the tackle job, you're giving someone legitimate to compete with, and that veteran could be a guy that you ultimately cut and don't feel bad about if they draft a tackle like Tristan Wirfs or Jedrick Wills or that sort. So really, to me, there's only three real needs. And then after that, you're just tossing guys on the roster.
Well, and see, and I agree with you with what the needs are, but I'm of the belief now that unless it's a guy like a Derek Wolfe or a Shelby Harris or who else is available out there right now that is a actual like talent, you know.
I think Mike Daniels is still out there. He's old, but Mike Daniels.
Yeah,
is
Mike Daniels, like a guy that's not just going to push, but probably will start. I don't see any reason to sign anybody before the draft. And the reason I say that is that these guys will probably still be available after the draft. So what you can do is if you say, hey, we're at 8, we draft Tristan Wirfs or Jedrick Wills. Okay, well, now your veteran backup tackle is Justin Murray. I mean, technically, it's probably the rookie to start with, but ideally, Murray's your veteran backup tackle. You know, in the same sense of defensive line, I don't even want to talk about defensive line because I don't want the Cardinals to draft a defensive lineman, but that's neither here nor there. But, you know,
beat Devon Hamilton in the third round.
Right. But, like, unless you're going to go get a Nickell Roby Coleman, a guy that's, you know, kind of been a really, really good NFL player, or like a Logan Ryan out of Tennessee. You know, I'm just kind of going through the list of guys that you could talk me into. I mean, Snacks Harrison's available. Maybe you go sign a guy like that. Like, those guys I would be fine with. You know, bringing in a guy like, you know, a low-end guy that is just – it is probably not going to do much but back up, you know, even like a Zach Kerr. I mean, you got him so late last year, you'll probably be able to get him or somebody like him late again. That's how I would look at it. I wouldn't push bringing anybody in right now. I would actually
– They're probably bringing back Charles Clay, though, according to Gambo.
Yeah, and you and I have jokingly talked about that we've heard that, and that's baffling. But at the same time, like, then you have your H-back position filled, and you just wait to see if something better comes along in the draft. Like you said, maybe that Albert last name from Missouri is available in the at 72 or even later, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, good luck in your future and Devers, Charles. I mean, it sucks, but it is what it is. So, you know, that's how I look at it. I don't see anybody, like I said, sans maybe like a true upgrade type of guy, like a Shelby Harris or a Derek Wolfe, that I'm in a rush, you know, Damon Harrison, you know, Snacks, Mike Daniels, like you said, like that I'm in a rush to go out and sign at this point. Like, let the market continue to dwindle, probably get some restructures done, and then come back after the draft and say, okay, we sat at 8, we picked, you know, Tristan Wirfs, whatever, just throw a name out there. Hey, Shelby Harris, we see you're still available. Nobody's picked you up yet. Like, we'll give you a 1-year, you know, $6 million prove-it deal. Come start for us, and now all of a sudden your defensive line, you know, or you could, you know, you can put anybody in there, Ndamukong Suh, Derek Wolfe, like I said, Damon Harrison, Mike Daniels, like all of those guys fit that thing. And in the same way, you're going, okay, say they draft Derek Brown and Seth has a heart attack. And then, you know, but then you come in and you go, hey, DeMar Dotson or Jason Peters or, you know, like you said, Marcus Gilbert, Cordy Glenn, like these guys, like, hey, we want you, you know, you're still available. It's after the draft. Why don't you come in and, you know, we'll kind of plug you in at right tackle and see what you have and see if you can play. And then if you beat out Justin, fantastic. If not, you have a veteran that's, you know, shown that he can play in the NFL on your roster.
And other than that, that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Secret podcast, episode 262. Our next show will start into the NFL draft, assuming it doesn't get pushed back. As of right now, we're still on schedule, and a month from now that the draft will happen. I think we're going to start looking at those. We've talked a little bit of draft so far, but I think our next show will talk about offensive prospects. We'll then do a defensive prospects, and then wait and do our mock draft like we do every year. And hopefully that takes us to the draft. So on behalf of the Rise of Secret podcast, that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back either next week or the week after. Thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea. Be Red Sea Red. And, of course, rise up, Sea Red.
Whoa!